Book of Daniel, chapter 3, verse 8 through 15. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, or psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made good, but if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace, and who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?
If you travel over to Birmingham, Alabama, one of the very first things that you will see high atop Red Mountain is a statue. This statue here is called the Vulcan statue. It is the world's largest cast iron statue. In fact, it is among the largest statues of any kind within the United States. This is a replica of the Roman god Vulcan. Vulcan was the god of fire and forge under the Roman society. This statue stands some 56 feet tall. It weighs over 120,000 pounds. Standing upon the pedestal on top of Red Mountain, it stands 615 feet above sea level and overlooks the city of Birmingham and all of Jones Valley. It was created for the 1904 World's Fair that was in St. Louis, Missouri. And since then, it has been in this location in Birmingham. I have been to the top of Vulcan. It is quite a sight to see, overlooking from that viewpoint. And we went in the spring, and it was windy, and you could feel that platform rock a little bit. But thankfully, it did not fall. If you'll notice the spear in his hand, that was actually a javelin. And back in the 60s, Vulcan was struck by lightning. And the bottom part of that javelin, which was about 20 feet long, fell and went through a three-story building below. Thankfully, no one was inside that building when it fell. So they left it as it was, and then later on, a plane almost crashed into it at night, could not see it, so they have replaced the spear. Now there is a light. He holds a light just like the Statue of Liberty does. It's interesting to go see this. It's a breathtaking sight to see. This morning, Billy read for us about another statue, a statue that was created by King Nebuchadnezzar. In Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, it says that he decided to build an image, an idol, if you will, of gold, and they put it on the plain of Dura. This image would be a very impressive thing to see. One of the reasons I showed you the statue of Vulcan this morning is because it is also a very impressive sight to see. But the image that Nebuchadnezzar built would have dwarfed the Vulcan image. The image that Nebuchadnezzar built was some 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide, and made of gold. Quite a bit more expensive, quite a bit more elegant than one made of iron. The king's statue was a sight to see. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar, he knew of the God of Israel. He knew that this God was considered to be the most high God. In fact, he said so in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 47. He said, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery," talking about the dream that had been interpreted for him. And you know, as perhaps in this dream that Joseph gave to him, or that Daniel gave to him, talked about the head of gold, and maybe Nebuchadnezzar wanted his own head of gold. And maybe that's one of the reasons he created this statue, so he could have this huge head of gold. It must have been important for the king, for he brought all of his leaders together, and he gave this command that it was to be a great and grandeur thing. In Daniel chapter 3, beginning with verse 4, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that in the moment that you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, that you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be immediately cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire." So this was quite a command. And it was for everyone who was in the region who would see that image was to immediately drop to their knees in worship of Nebuchadnezzar's image. You know, the story of Nebuchadnezzar here really tells us about three different kinds of people. First of all, it tells about the conformers, those who bowed down to this towering idol. You see, some of the people, a lot of the people, feared Nebuchadnezzar. And they feared his power. And when this came out, they feared his wrath. They were consumed, first of all, with idolatry. So the fact of bowing down before an image did not bother them. In fact, you will find that it began to become a great problem for the Israelites to bow down before images. A lot of fear took place with this command. And a lot of people supported bowing down to this image because of their fear. You know, we tend to always go along with the bully, don't we? You know, most of us can think back in school when there were bullies in school. And we had our bullies in my school. And, of course, you avoided them if at all possible. And if you saw them coming towards you, you held your breath because you did not know what they were going to say or what they were going to do. And that's how these people felt about Nebuchadnezzar. He was a bully. He had his way with the people, with all of the people. And he offered consequences to those who refused to fall down and worship. So for the most part, people conformed to this simply out of fear. The story also tells about informers. These are the ones who accused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The Chaldeans are filled with jealousy, first of all, with the prominence of the Jews. God had seen to it that the Jews have done well. Now they were a threat, which is one of the reasons that they were put in Egyptian bondage to begin with, is because they had grown so in number that they became a threat to the Egyptians, and therefore they were put into Egyptian bondage. And now, since Daniel knew the mystery of the king's dream, they looked at that as a disadvantage for them and an advantage for the Jewish nation. And they spoke with contempt to the king about those certain Jews who would not bow. And in all probability, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were not the only three Jews that refused to bow before this image. The Jewish nation, for the most part, followed God. Now, as we get into the New Testament, we find that many people in the Jewish nation fought against Christ, fought against Christianity, and we find that all through the Scripture. And we look at that and we think, well, the whole Jewish nation was against Jesus. That was not true. And the whole Jewish nation was not against God. But there were some that were. And these, particularly here, were informers. And so they spoke with contempt the fact that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which was, by the way, important in some factors, would not bow. And then we have the transformers. And they are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego themselves. You see, when the king called them before him and they said, look, I'm going to give you one more opportunity. I'm going to give you one more chance to bow down before this image and nothing will happen to you. But they would not do it. And it infuriated King Nebuchadnezzar. And if you read farther along in this story, you will find that he became so angry that he heated that furnace 7 times its normal temperature. Even to the point to the soldiers that pushed them into the fiery furnace died because it was so hot for them. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would not give in to this image of Nebuchadnezzar. They were defying basically the ruler of the world. Now, very quickly, there are 3 things I want to suggest to you from this story. Number one, whether the people of the Old Testament, the Israelites who followed the Jewish law, or us today who follow the law of Christianity, righteous people will suffer. Paul tells us in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I doubt very seriously if anybody in this room has ever been persecuted. And I'm almost certain that there's no one in this room that has ever been persecuted because of their Christianity. You see, that doesn't really happen in America, does it? Not yet. I fear the day is coming. As the radicals continue to gain control over our country, I fear the day is coming. But as of now, we don't have to worry about persecution because of our belief in God. Jesus informed his disciples of what was waiting on them if they followed him. Luke chapter 9, verses 57 and 58. Now it happens as they journeyed on the road that someone said to him, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. Isn't that great? Jesus has a great follower here. But then Jesus says to him, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Do you know what he was telling this disciple? If you want to follow me, life may not be easy. In fact, if you follow me, life will not be easy. I don't even have a place to lay my head at night. You may not have a place to lay your head at night. Sometimes being righteous brings on persecution. But you know, Paul indicates in Philippians 1 verse 29 that suffering for the Lord is a privilege. He said, for to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake. Isn't this what happened to Peter and John When they left the beautiful gate of the temple, they went back to their homes, and they counted it all worthy that they could suffer for their Lord. It was so important to them to serve God and to suffer for Him. And then Jesus says, "Nah, hang on. I'm sorry about that." Jesus says in John 15 and verse 20, "Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you." Now, for those of you who are in our Sunday morning Bible class on the apostles, you're going to find out that each one of the apostles found this out firsthand. For the difficulties that they had in spreading the gospel to the world, and the responses that they received and how they died as a result of it. There was much suffering by the Christians because they followed their Lord. Righteous people will suffer. Another thing we want to understand is that even though this will happen, God is able to deliver us. I'm going to go back to verses 17 and 18 of our text. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. Now, this is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego talking to King Nebuchadnezzar himself. There is no doubt in their mind, God can deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you that, king, we will not serve your gods, nor will we worship the golden image that you have set up. You see, faith brings on a clinging. If we have the love and the faith in God, we are going to cling to God because of the faith that we have in Him. But we also, through our faith, understand that whether or not God is going to save us, that's a matter of His choosing. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego walked through the door of that fiery furnace with the knowledge that God can save them. They also understood that He may choose not to. And when they walked into that fiery furnace, they knew that they could be walking into death. But their faith in their God was there. There may be some in this room today who will not see the sunrise tomorrow. I do hope that if that happens, the faith that we have will be sustained till we know that God can save us. They walked in faith in God. Yes, we get disappointed in times. Sometimes we wonder why things don't work out the way we think they ought to work out. We wonder sometimes why God doesn't follow our logic as we go through our lives. But you know, with our disappointments, the reason we have our disappointments is because we're thinking about these things with human hearts and human minds. And we can't think about these things the way God does. You know, we've all been told no by God at one time or another in our lives. And we need to understand, and sometimes this is hard to do, we need to understand that when God tells us no, He has something better for us in mind. And we have to have the faith to believe that. Many of us, when we question God, we say, well, God doesn't care about me. And you walk away from Him. And you walk away from the church. And you lose the faith that you have. But we need to keep that understanding in our minds that all things work together for our good if we will love Him and be called according to His purpose. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 27, the king's high official gathered around and saw that the fire had had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor was their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them. They could not deny the power of God in this incident. Now, they didn't understand it, but they could not deny it. God had delivered those three men from Pharaoh. I'm sorry, from Nebuchadnezzar. Which brings us to our third point. We are not alone. Verse 25 of Daniel chapter 3, someone said, "Look, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and that they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." Those three men walked into that fiery furnace, and someone went in with them. It was the angel of the Lord protecting them, keeping them from harm. And it's interesting that the writer would put in that the fourth one looked like the Son of God. How would he have known that? He had never seen the Son of God. You and I have never seen the Son of God. But this morning, if you are a Christian, you believe without a shadow of a doubt, he is right here with us now. In our trials, in our tribulations, we do not walk alone. I love this passage in 2 Timothy chapter 4, beginning with verse 16. This is Paul speaking here, and you would think he would be depressed. "At my first defense, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me so that through me the message might be fully complained and proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom." Do you believe that this morning? Do you believe that he is capable of rescuing you from the devil's mouth? Do you believe that he is capable of taking you to heaven to be with him when this life is over? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had that kind of faith. And we must have that kind of faith. We are not alone. These stories, no doubt, are written for our encouragement. You know, Paul tells us, Romans 15, verse 4, "For whatever was written in earlier times were written for our instruction, that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope." We have everything that we need to develop a faith. We have everything that we need to persevere in this life, regardless of what we have to go through here. We know what is waiting for us. Nebuchadnezzar learned that the God of Israel was the real deal. And in Daniel chapter 3, verses 28 through 30, this was Nebuchadnezzar's response. Now, this is the man who built the image. This is the man who put the golden statue out there and made everybody bow down before it. This is the same man that put Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in that fiery furnace for the purpose of destroying him, and even boasted, "Who is your God that can deliver him from my hand?" This same Nebuchadnezzar is now saying, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn from limb to limb and their houses reduced to rubbish. Inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way. Nebuchadnezzar is now a believer in God. He has seen firsthand his power. He has seen firsthand his love for his servants. That's what we need, folks, in our lives. So I ask you this morning, are you a conformer? Are you going to run and bow down to an image of gold? Or are you going to be a transformer and stand firm with your God? You know, each time you refuse an invitation to become a Christian, you need to understand you are walking into that fiery furnace of death. Because it is only through Jesus Christ that you can be saved from that fiery furnace of death. And if you think that fiery furnace was hot, imagine hell. Because that is the end for those who are outside of Christ. But if you will obey him, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you will be delivered. If you have not obeyed God, obey him today. Christian friend, each time you leave God, you're walking back into that fiery furnace of sin. Come back to the Lord. Give your life back to him and let him deliver you once again. This morning, if you need to respond to the invitation of Christ, please come while we stand and sing this song to encourage you.